This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the bite-sized business breakfast, the very best bits of today's show from Tuesday, the 26th of April. Some cracking interviews today, including the Emirati HR expert Talib Hashim from TBH Advisory talking about the forthcoming Eid al-Fitr holidays. Seems cut and dried for federal government employees. They're going to get 9 days. But what about the private sector? Then we're going to get some insight on Twitter. We'll hear from Elon Musk himself and Tony B. Graham, our US correspondent, long-time Dubai resident, but now in the United States. And finally, inflation, putting that genie back in the bottle. Really interesting conversation with Altaf Kassem. He's with State Street Global Advisors. He's an investment expert. He's based in London, but he's out here in Dubai on a business trip. His thoughts on inflation and where you should put your money. First up, though, let's get our big stories for today. Twitter and the Eid al-Fitr holiday. Let's start with Elon. So he's done it, Tom.
Well, it looks like it, doesn't it? Bar a major disruption. And it's interesting the way he's done it because from an investor's point of view, he sort of had the company over a barrel to a certain degree, didn't he? Because in terms of, you look at it from a board member's point of view, he'd secretly been buying up. He's going to get in trouble. He's going to get in trouble. The regulators are going to ping him with a fine left, right and centre.
Is he Barney Rubble?
But he's in Barney Rubble because the regulations, as far as I understand them, are if you get anywhere near 5%, you need to put your head above the parapet and go, look, I am looking for more, etc. And then it gets a little bit difficult for boards, etc. He didn't do that. He surreptitiously started buying. He's got 9% now. 2.6 billion or 2.2.6 billion he sunk in that 9%, which is what, 1% of his wealth at the moment as it is, or thereabouts. So it's a drop in the ocean. But as soon as it became apparent that that was the case, obviously the share price went up. And then when he makes his indications, the offer to shareholders at the moment is very generous because it's a lot more than the share price was before he went in and said, look, I've got 9% now. He helped to elevate that stock.
It's 38% above the price before he announced that he was buying shares of Twitter.
It's a brilliant deal. It's a deal that's going to get him fined by the regulators because he should have been saying that before he went out fishing for 9%. But, you know, when you're the richest man in the world, whatever fine you get thrown at you, you suck it up, don't you? These
yes.
rules don't really apply when it comes to a man like Elon Musk, which is a bit of a worry moving forward because then it is the monopolization of social platforms, amongst others. So shareholders might not be happy, and there are a couple of investors that have launched a couple of actions against him already as a result of this because of being his underhand actions. The board members, I mean, what do you do? I mean, just literally, what do you do? I mean, their job is to make money for shareholders, isn't it? And shareholders are making money.
They have to be acting in the interest of the shareholders. The company lost money last year. Someone's offered to pay $40-odd billion for it. Snatch his hand off.
Yeah.
And they are.
What's that? That's that posh word that they use for
fiduciary
yes.
duty.
That's it, isn't it?
Yes.
And this is it. And so, therefore, it's a win-win for Mr. Musk and he gets his little social media playground.
What's going to happen to Twitter? This is Elon speaking last week at his TED Talk. He says it's all about free speech.
It won't be perfect, but I think we want it to really have, like I said, the perception and reality that speech is as free as reasonably possible. And a good sign as to whether there is free speech is someone you don't like allowed to say something you don't like? And if that is the case, then we have free speech. And it's damn annoying when someone you don't like says something you don't like. That is a sign of a healthy, functioning free speech situation.
More on this throughout the show this morning, speaking to a range of experts. Another big talker today is the Eid al-Fitr holidays. And which days you're getting off. Ajman, as we're reporting overnight, becoming the latest government entity to say, yeah, it's 9 days. You clock off at lunchtime on the Friday and you're not back in till a week on Monday, so 9 days off. But what about the private sector? We don't quite know yet. We got a Twitter poll going this morning asking you this very question. And I can tell you so far, and there's lots of responses on this one, only 19% say they've got the full week off. 29% say they've got Monday to Wednesday, but the majority, 52%, say they still don't know. And it's 10 past eight on the Tuesday.
Sharon's been in touch this morning. We've got a mixed bag of responses on the text messages. Keep coming in, 4001. Sharon says, we got the formal confirmation from corporate late last night. One full week, back to the office on Monday the 9th. So late decision there. A lot of people saying, hang on, didn't they unify holidays 2 years ago? I've dug out that article. Yes, they did. March the 19th, 2019, private sector workers will have the same number of holidays as government employees for the next 2 years. March the 19th, 2019, March 19th, 2021, March 19th, 2020.
Oh, I didn't know there was a time limit on it.
That's what it said.
Righty-ho.
This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
So let's talk Eid break, if we can, because we've got a couple of polls going, haven't we, Rich? Should we remind people of where those Twitter, Instagram and other polls are at the moment?
Just to recap, the Instagram, it is a third of people say they're getting the full week off. Nobody's getting Monday to Wednesday yet. And two-thirds say they still don't know. So that is the Instagram poll. Two-thirds still don't know. The Twitter poll this morning is, to be honest, it's not identical, but it's very similar. 55% say they still don't know. So more than half of people, Business Breakfast listeners, don't know what kind of holiday they're getting next week.
Get involved in the conversation, please. Basically, we want to know, what's the directive from your company? Are you the boss? Are you an employee? We want to know if you are off next week or not. Do you want us on the radio or not? That's all we want to know. Come on, get your thoughts into us, please. Text us now on 4001 with your plans. Why? Because we know that federal government workers will enjoy a week-long holiday for Eid al-Fitr after the UA cabinet decided to extend the dates that were initially announced. So, impact of that on holidays in general and business here in the region. Time now to talk to a man who has helped to drive localization as the new globalization here. He's the founder of TBH, a Dubai-based strategic local talent and business advisory firm. Joins us live on the line, also live via Microsoft Teams. It's a warm welcome to Talib Hashim. Good morning to you, Talib.
Good morning.
Great to have you. Ramadan Kareem, first and foremost, to you. And thanks so much indeed for taking time for us to discuss a topic that's been discussed by many here at the moment, Talib. From where you stand and from the companies that you're in constant communication with, how are private companies approaching the coming Eid break? And why haven't many announced their dates yet?
Well, you know how it is in private sector companies, you know, the employers are not too enthusiastic about holidays the employees are. So normally private sector employers normally wait until you have a day or 2 days before the holidays to officially announce it and confirm the holidays for the employees. So expect in the next, the companies I've been speaking to almost reflects what you have on your poll. A lot of them are expecting to announce officially through in the next 2 days, the holidays. Most of them are going to abide by the holidays that were announced by the Ministry of HR and Amortization. And yeah, that is what it seems like. It's the case every year. Companies wait until the last minute to announce the holidays. And it's frustrating for employees. It keeps them hanging and concerned and worried.
Just more on those frustrations as well. I completely understand it from an HR and a board of directors and a CEO's point of view that you are waiting to the last minute to take the greater advice and see what others are doing in the market. But it must be difficult for employees in the private sector to plan accordingly.
Absolutely. It is difficult. You know, employees will have plans to travel or to travel internally. I've been speaking to, you know, in my field of work, we work with local talent. So a lot of them work in the private sector and have relatives in the government sector. Mm. So the government sector knew from the get-go, you know, employees expected a long holiday. And, everything was announced a couple of days ago. So they have relatives in the public sector who already made plans for a 9-day holiday or even traveling, but they are still, a lot of them are still clueless and not sure about their holidays. And this brings up another topic, which is alignment of holidays, which was expected. You know, it was announced a couple of years ago about the alignment of holidays or public holidays in the UAE between public and private sector. So that is some of the frustration that I'm hearing when we're speaking to employees in the private sector.
It's interesting you mentioned that alignment, because we've looked back into that one and there was an alignment made, an announcement made by the Cabinet end of March or mid-March 2019. It came on the back of them announcing holidays for the next 2 years, for 2019 into 2021, but also made the point of the next 2 years. That might have been lost in a few of the bits of translation leading forward to where we are at the moment. But again, did that set a little bit of a precedent, this bringing together of federal holidays and private holidays?
Yes, it did. At the time, it did set a precedent. It brought positivity and optimism, especially employees in the private sector, whether they're expats and especially locals who work in the private sector. As you know, the private sector has struggled historically to attract locals. So there was optimism, but now there is. If you speak to the locals, and I look at the Arabic social media and the locals I speak to, there is a sense of frustration. What happened with that announcement? My take on it, honestly, is, you know, the UAE government is a government that's known to adapt. The announcement was in 2019. A lot has changed since then. And I think what the government is looking at, and specifically more, is listening to the private sector employers and looking, okay, right, we can no longer do this alignment of public and private holiday, private sector holidays, given the economic climate and globally and in the country as well.
So Taleb, you're an entrepreneur, you own your own business. What are you going to do next week? And what are your staff going to do?
You know, what I normally do historically is I don't want to blow my own horn, but I say I'm a pioneer. I give my staff government sector holiday if it's good. You know, we work a lot with government. We work extensively with them. We know that our team have relatives with the government sector. But just like the UAE, this year is different. I think me and my team, we've been busy this Ramadan. It has been a great Ramadan for us. Alhamdulillah, thank God. So we can't wait to get back to work. Everyone wants to get back to work as early as possible. So we're off until Wednesday and can't wait to get back to work, especially, you know, given we just have Thursday, Friday, and then we're back to the weekend again next week.
Just a quick one for you, Taleb, as well. And I know that you've obviously you've placed so many individuals in roles at local talent into the private sector and vice versa as well. In terms of sort of weighing up options for employees moving forward and careers, etc., we've seen a lot of local talent moving over into the private sector. But in light of larger holidays available, does that make your job more difficult?
Yes, it does. It does make my way. It adds to the challenges of my job. I mean, building the proposition for local talent join the private sector hasn't been easy, as you know, and we've discussed in many of the talks we've had with Dubai Eye. However, my sense is, you know, it has been a challenging year for the job market in the past 1 year. And when you're looking at UAE nationals and Emiratization in particular, it hasn't been easy. So a lot of the locals aren't bogged down so much about the holidays. A lot of them are just eager to work in the private sector, even if the holidays are shorter, even if the pay is not as attractive as the public sector. People are just simply looking for work.
Taleb, I've got to jump in there. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but thank you so much indeed for joining us and giving us your thoughts on this one. And whatever happens next week, Taleb, enjoy your Eid break. Ramadan Kareem.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast,
where we're talking Twitter. So So Elon has sealed the deal. Lots of questions coming in already. No name on this one, just the letter G. Elon is king, the Tony Stark of Silicon Valley. And now he controls the largest public broadcast channel, including users like Dubai Police, Narendra Modi, and the President of the United States. All hail King Musk. Not everyone is so enthusiastic. Going to get the thoughts of our US correspondent, Tony B. Graham, in a second. But first of all, let's hear from Elon himself. He was speaking last week at a TED Talk in Canada about his, what at the time was proposed, takeover of Twitter. And he said the first thing he's going to do is promote free speech.
It won't be perfect, but I think we want it to really have, like I said, the perception and reality that speech is as free as reasonably possible. And a good sign as to whether there is free speech is someone you don't like allowed to say something you don't like? And if that is the case, then we have free speech. And it's damn annoying when someone you don't like says something you don't like. That is a sign of a healthy, functioning free speech situation.
Tony B. Graham joins us live on the line from Minnesota. Morning, Tony.
Good morning, Dubai. Good morning, Richard, and good evening from America.
It's good to have you with us, Tony. Of course, longtime resident of Dubai, now in the United States. What's the word around the campfire about this takeover?
The thing about this is a fascinating story, Richard. So very, very few Americans would ever disagree with what Elon Musk just said. There are times in a democracy, there are frequent times in a democracy when people will say things that you disagree with or you dislike. I think the concern is that not just Twitter, but social media more broadly has been used to say things that are just patently untrue. You know, in America, we have the freedom of speech, but that doesn't afford you the right to shout fire in a crowded room. And I think this speaks to the debate around, you know, the need for greater regulation for social media. I think when Twitter was a listed company, I think many Americans felt that that would afford some more measures of constraint or control. And I think the concern rests in this major, major social media platform being in the hands of one person.
Okay, so Elon thinks he will be the custodian or the guardian of free speech. The big question people are asking is, will Donald Trump, A, be allowed to go back on Twitter, and B, want to go back on Twitter? Trump was on Fox News last night, maybe you watched him, and he said actually he's not going to because he set up his own social media platform, Truth, which has had limited success. How big a deal is the Trump willy won'ty on Twitter debate in the United States where you are?
Well, I think the former president will go where he sees the opportunity to have the loudest megaphone. I mean, unfortunately, his Truth venture has struggled, and I think that's putting it diplomatically. And I think, you know, Elon Musk, he is an entrepreneur. He's a very successful one. And I think he will conclude that if former President Trump being on Twitter affords him the opportunity to make Twitter more profitable, I suspect that that will happen.
I watched in full his 1 hour interview at the TED conference last week in Canada. And he was asked by the person interviewing him, not directly about Trump, but about banning people from Twitter. And he said, I am much more in favor of timeouts than I am permanent bans. Of course, former President Trump was banned permanently last year. But if Elon is veering towards timeouts, then there might be a door in for him to come back, Tony.
I'm wondering what the effect of a timeout might be on the former president. But that aside, I guess the question here is like, who is the arbiter of timeouts? You know, who is that? I guess, you know, with a publicly listed company, there are more regulatory and social and therefore market pressures on making sure that the social media platforms are not used or are not abused to spread information that is either harmful or untrue. And I think, you know, again, the concern is that when the ownership is with one person, those decisions will be commercial in nature, as opposed to whether they are good for society or a healthy and accurate public discourse.
Well, but is this not been a debate in the United States, other countries as well, for hundreds of years? The Washington Post is owned by Jeff Bezos. I look back in history, people like, you know, William Randolph Hearst owning newspapers in the United States 100 years ago. Billionaires, wealthy people owning high-profile media outlets is nothing new. Rupert Murdoch and Fox News, which we just mentioned.
It's nothing new. It's nothing new. I think, you know, social media is, you know, they're the newspapers, rightly or wrongly, they've become the newspapers of the 21st century. And so, you know, the debate will ensue. I suspect there will be some pushback on billionaires buying up platforms for regardless of what they purport to be, you know, whether they purport to be defenders of free speech or really more seeking megaphones for their own personal projects. This will continue to be a debate, as it was in previous centuries.
Finally, does anyone under the age of 40 care who owns Twitter or what Twitter does? We care because we're over the age of 40. But your kids, is Twitter relevant to them? Do they even have a Twitter account, or is it all about TikTok and goodness knows what else?
No, I asked. So I have a 20-year-old, a 15-year-old, and a 13-year-old, and I asked all of them prior to this interview what they thought about Elon Musk's acquisition. And the answer was a collective youthful yawn. Two of them don't have Twitter accounts, and the third says, well, I haven't logged in for at least 2 years. And so is that relevant? That was their answer. And that will be a challenge that Mr. Musk will have to grapple with.
Tony, it's always great to talk to you. Appreciate your time. I was going to say this morning, it's late with you. What time is it in Minnesota?
It is 10:29 in freezing cold Minnesota. It is 0 degrees Celsius right now on the 25th of April.
What?
And wow, do I miss Dubai.
Well, you are always welcome back, and the flights are back open now. Tony B. Graham, longtime Dubai resident, now our impromptu US correspondent. Appreciate your time this morning, Tony. Thanks very much indeed. And yeah, Tony's got kids similar age to yours. Twitter, I mean, do they even have an account?
Not at all. No. Don't use it. It's seen as an old man. And it's more than that. I think it's seen as a platform for journalists, for broadcasters, and for politicians. It is serious social media, which every now and again gets a little bit silly, but it is serious social media compared to other platforms out there. It's grown-up social media. And therefore it has lost the younger generations. And that's partly what one of the reasons Musk has said he wants to try and big back some of the big celebrities, because they just don't use it.
He wants the Beeb and Taylor Swift,
yeah,
doesn't he?
They're on there, they just don't use it.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Let's talk inflation now. Delighted to have in the studio the head of investment strategy and research from State Street Global Advisors for Europe, the Middle East and Africa, based out of London, but here in Dubai this morning, and joining us in the studio, Altaf Kassim. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And Ramadan Kareem, sir.
Ramadan Kareem.
So let's talk about inflation, because
sure,
that's the big thing that your clients are asking you about at the moment. And what you say is you think the world has priced in too many rate hikes.
Absolutely.
Over the next couple of years. I hope you're right. Explain your thinking.
Yeah, what we think is going to happen is that, I mean, the Fed is going to start on this aggressive tightening cycle, and a lot of central banks will follow suit. In the UK, where I come from, we've already started. But it's going to start seeing that growth is slowing, and that's going to make central banks pause for thought, and they're going to pull back on those rate hikes. So we're not going to see the number that are actually priced into the market right now.
So the dot plot, depending on which Fed policymaker you look at, is pricing about 8 interest rate hikes in between now and the next few months or so. What do you think we're actually going to get?
I think we're going to get something more like 5. I think we're going to get probably a couple of big ones at the beginning, as has been kind of quite aggressively telegraphed. But after that, like I say, growth is going to start to slow. And central bankers, if they do what they're supposed to do and actually check on the data, they're going to see that, and they're going to start actually pulling back on those rate hikes. And we're not going to get those full 8 that have been priced in.
How do you analyse the Fed's behavior over the past few months. For example, I was reading The Economist this weekend, and they've got a big headline, "The Fed That Failed." And that's quite a popular narrative at the moment, that the Fed was behind the curve on inflation last year, should have raised rates earlier. And the reason that we've got inflation at 7, 8% in the United States and other places is because of the Fed that failed. What's your analysis?
Yeah, I mean, that's a bit strong, but I would definitely say too little, too late. So they're definitely behind the curve. Now they're playing catch up. That's why there's this need for these aggressive hikes at the beginning. And I think that is what's going to cause them problems, because those aggressive hikes are going to cause growth to fall, say, in 6 months' time. And when they see that, they're going to have to dial back. And they won't have got the rate hikes in that they need, which they're going to need in the bank, because they're going to need to have to stimulate the economy later on.
Right then. So let's talk about what we do with our money, because you are, it says in your business card, Head of Investment Strategy and Research. So your client, you're here from London to talk to your clients,
yes.
And they're going to be saying, Altov, fine, that's great. Where do I put my money? And actually, you like commodities at the moment.
Yep. I mean, we definitely think that when you're worried about inflation, a great place to put your money is in commodities, because they tend to go up as inflation goes up. And we've seen that really dramatically recently. So not just energy prices, but what we call soft commodities like agriculture, you know, grains and so on.
Have we not missed the boat with that, though? Was the time not to invest not 6 months ago?
I mean, you would have done great if you started 6 months ago and we kind of saw the signals and we got started getting overweight commodities about then. But we don't think it's too late. We think inflation is going to stay high at least until the end of the year, and that's going to keep commodities afloat.
A popular phrase 4 or 5 years ago was a commodities super cycle. That it wasn't just up a bit in 1 year and down a bit in another year. That long term, the growth of the global economy, the demand from consumers would drive a long term super cycle for energy, for food, the things that you mentioned. Do you buy into that?
I think there's some argument for that. The last big commodity super cycle was driven by basically the growth in China. Now, China's very different now to what it was, say, 20 years ago. It's less all about exports and manufacturing. It's more about domestic and consumer. So it's not going to be, I think, the same powerful super cycle we saw back then. But there are reasons. We think globalization is slowing down. That's going to keep commodity prices higher. And, you know, economies are still growing. There's going to be demand for commodities. So not quite the super cycle we saw, say, 25, 30 years ago. But it's still going to be a long-term uptrend, and we think owning commodities right now still makes sense.
Suresh has written in saying, I want to invest in the stock market. Which region is the best in the world right now?
So for us, it's still the US. We started the year hopeful that it was going to be the year of Europe. But unfortunately, the conflict in the Ukraine has hit Europe hard, and Germany in particular, the largest economy. So we've switched back to thinking that the US is the equity market to own right now.
What is it that you like about the United States?
We think it's got quality, which is what you want. We think it's got companies that can withstand inflation. They can take the costs of inflation and pass them on through prices. Effectively, they've got pricing power. And that's what you want. They'll be able to hang on to their margins, where other companies are going to have to take a hit.
What about cryptocurrencies? We're talking about them this morning. We've got a new exchange opening up here. What's it called, Tom, from the Lego movie?
Kraken.
The Kraken is opening up in Abu Dhabi. We've got Binance here. How do you, as a head of investment strategy and research, approach cryptocurrencies?
For us, I mean, one of the real worries is that it's an unregulated market. So it's hard for us to advise investors to get involved in an unregulated market because the lack of controls, the lack of safeguarding there. What I would say is that it's worth looking at, you know, the technology behind cryptocurrencies and maybe invest in some of the companies that provide that. But in terms of advising on a particular cryptocurrency, I think for us, that's tough because of the lack of regulation.
Well, putting because you're head of investment strategy, which is advising, research, which is looking into things. Is there a research methodology for valuing cryptocurrencies at the moment? I can't think of one. Bitcoin's $40,000-ish this morning. I've no idea if that's high, low, or whatever. But is there a research methodology that mainstream banks like Straight Street, like yours, can apply to cryptos?
I think at the moment it's tough. We don't think there's a way of coming up with a fair value for crypto. As you said earlier in the show, a lot of it is driven by flows, and that seems to be the primary reason that cryptocurrencies go up and down, the amount of money that's flowing in and out. Also, it's a bit early to tell. I know some of these have been around for years, but still, we don't have the kind of research, we don't have the kind of data that we've, for example, built up in stock markets. So for us, it's still a bit of a question mark about how to value cryptos, what they should be worth, more than just saying, you know, sentiment and flows are really driving those values up and down.
Also, have 20 seconds on investing in this part of the world, your clients. We've got the big Aramco IPO a few years ago, the big Diwa IPO a few days ago. 20 seconds on that.
Yeah, we think that this is one of the major markets in terms of primary activity. So like IPOs, it's the biggest market, I think, in the world so far this year in terms of that. So we think it's still an attractive market. As we said, we think commodity prices are going to stay high. So this region is going to remain buoyant, we think.
Can't let you go without talking about, and it seems an odd question, you're on a business trip.
Yes.
They're back, aren't they? You're here to see clients.
Yeah, it's great. It's like we were saying before, it's fun to meet clients in their locations, have a chat, learn about their families, learn about what they plan for their holidays. You learn a lot more about your clients, and that's great.
Good to see you. Altef Kasim is Europe, Middle East and Africa Head of Investment Strategy and Research at State Street Global Advisors. Appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you very much.
This is The Business Breakfast.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.